This is the story of how the punk band I was in when I was 16 and 17 managed to get a track on the first punk compilation on the Crass label. When I was 16, some mates and me formed a punk band. Initially, there was two rhythm guitarists, and I was one of them. None of us could play, apart from the lead guitarist could play a little bit, but we were all just learning. But that was the ethos at the time, to have a go. Our lead singer wrote, our then lead singer wrote all the lyrics for the songs. And in our first 6 months, although we didn't do any gigs, we did hire a four-track studio to record, I think it was probably four of our songs. Most of us had got into a band called Crass, an anarcho-punk band called Crass, and we sent off that tape to Crass, who had their own record label, in the hope that they'd like it or perhaps they might release it. That didn't happen, but it did open communication with Crass, and we later then organised for Crass and Poison Girls to come and play in Maryport in West Cumbria, with us supporting. As we went through that process, as we got more and more into Crass and the politics around Crass, different members of the band, including myself, started to write more of the songs. And we got tired of the lead singer and his approach to everything, his approach to life, and he wasn't really interested in the same sort of stuff that we were. His songs were more filled with bitterness and anger at life, which is a little bit how he was, really. So we decided we'd had enough of him, and the rest of the lads asked me to be the lead singer, which made sense on the level that I was one of the members who wasn't very good musically, but also we probably had one too many guitarists. There wasn't any great need for two rhythm guitarists. Some might say there wasn't any great need for any rhythm guitarist in most of the songs we came up with. So anyway, we managed to get Crass to come and play in Maryport. And on the back of that, they then contacted us to say, actually, we're producing a compilation album that includes a lot of the bands we've played with, and we'd like to put one of your tracks from that tape you sent us about a year ago. We'd like to put one of those tracks on. But by this time, we'd become quite different people, quite different politically, quite different musically, and we were a very different band, not least because we were a different group of people. We got rid of the lead singer, as I said. So we quite arrogantly, we decided that we didn't want one of our tracks from the band that we were to go on the compilation album. So what we did was we set up in my parents' attic, and we played live into a tiny tape recorder, which was probably about 8 inches by 8 inches square. And we took one take, played it live into a tiny tape recorder, played it back, thought that'll do the trick, and actually sent that off to Crass and said again, quite arrogantly, no, we don't want you to put out that previous one we sent you a year ago, because that's not who we are anymore. we want you to put this out. And to be honest, I was going to say, to our surprise, they did. But thinking back, we didn't really contemplate letting them publish a track that was a representation of almost a previous band. We wanted what we saw as our sort of rabble-rousing political end of the set number. That usually got everyone going when we played. So we did that, and Crass agreed and put it on, and then sent us lots of free copies of the first Bullshit Detector. So that's the story of how a punk band of five 16 to 17 year olds in Maryport managed to get a track on the first Bullshit Detector compilation.